This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Dan Vo, born in early 80s, is the son of Vietnamese immigrants and discovered he was gay listening to Joy, age 16. Dan was raised with his sister Viv at Mill Park in Melbourne's northern suburbs. His maternal grandparents played an important role in raising them both, as his parents did shift work at Australia Post. Asians were in the minority at the local Catholic primary school, so on weekends, Dan attended Vietnamese school. During Dan's youth, radio played an important role via SBS Vietnamese Radio, and Dan has said it was the thing that bound us to our lost home. In his early 20s, Dan joined Joy as a volunteer and subsequently became an employee. He worked with Joy for 5 years as the marketing manager and also a stint as acting general manager. And when he became the acting general manager, Dan was both the youngest and the longest serving member at that time. During this time, Dan also presented the popular program The Fool and the Opera, which was an opera program for everyone, making it accessible to all people, not just the opera buffs. And I think the show was awarded or nominated for a Community Broadcasting Award. And it's further testament to the fact that radio played an important role in the family, as Dan's sister is also a broadcaster on community radio station SYN, the Student Youth Network. So whilst some may not feel Dan fits the term elder, including Dan himself, I feel he does. Elder to me is not another name for an older person, but a term that denotes a leader and one who advocates for others, who can be any age. Dan was my mentor when I first joined Joy as a volunteer, and I think he is a true leader. In his softly spoken way, Dan has shown maturity beyond his years in the way he successfully communicates with all facets and ages of the GLBTI community. Dan now works in mainstream media and is making a new life for himself in London. And my co-host Anastasia and I warmly welcome Dan Vo to our voice.
Hello.
This is your life.
That was an incredible introduction. Thank you so much.
Well, I think
it's such a thrill to be here as well, so thank you for having me.
It feels like you've come home.
It does. I was just walking through the corridors and sort of sticky beaking through little things, and there's it feels like home. I remember even sitting in this chair right now, I can actually feel the chair, and it just I've sat in this chair so many times in this exact position, and it's all just coming back. It's like muscle memory. It's just recognizing everything, the scent, the smell, the place. It's just incredible to be here again.
I think you should tell us about the red table.
The red table has been sawn in half. It makes it very practical, two separate tables. But the red table, I was just telling you before, there was once a telephone campaign that we had at Joy. And this is actually before my time as well. I know it via the photo archive. And it's the very famous red table where we've got Paul Turtich, Mark Gardner,
Anne.
I think Anne Hamilton is there as well, and they're all sitting on the table with, it's an incredibly cheesy a photo shoot with all telephones.
Just like the song that you chose at the start of the program.
yes, my gay awakening was thanks to that song. At about age 16, I would just channel flick, and I was just flicking one night, and I heard this young man talk about having a crush on a boy at school, and I was just like, "Oh, that's like me." And he said, "Oh, I want to play that song. I'm going to play you a song, and it's called The Coffee Song by Super Sister. And it was imported to Melbourne. I think we're the only station that still plays it.
Probably
the only station that's ever played it.
Yeah,
possibly.
Absolutely.
That's what makes it special.
It was brought over by Damien Nicholas, and those lyrics. You know the lyrics.
Oh yeah, we've played it a lot, especially during Radiothon.
Yeah. I used to trot it out for Radiothon as well. As you know, I love my man like I like my coffee hot, strong, and sweet like toffee. Incredibly cheesy.
Yeah.
But that was an awakening moment. I sort of bolted out of bed and started dancing in the middle of the night, you know, by myself to this music. That it was just a euphoric experience.
So where to from there? That's amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And then how did you come to find Joy then actually to become a volunteer?
It took a little while because even though I was listening to gay and lesbian radio, it took me a little while to actually connect the dots that it meant that I was actually gay. It was more an awakening than, you know, immediately realizing I was gay. And then beyond that, you know, I had to go to university and try and find the gay community there and not connect with them. I didn't immediately find people that I connected with. So there was just a call out for volunteers at Joy, specifically for marketing. And I missed the cutoff date by a day. And then there was an events volunteer call out. And that's when I came in for the interview and I met Paul Turditch, who was the station manager at the time. And, you know, it was just a fairly stock standard routine interview until he kind of asked me, you know, I can't remember what it was, but I remember telling him that I was just going through some things at the time, you know, not finding a community and having things happen at home that, you know, weren't that were very confusing. And he sort of, and I remember this glint, he always has this glint in his eye occasionally, and I see it with, you know, whenever he's working with particular volunteers that he's wanting to, you know, really help and support. There was a glint in his eye and he kind of went, right, okay, well, I think there's a place for you here. So
there it was.
That's
start.
Beautiful to hear yeah. that when you're wanting to feel you want to belong somewhere and someone says, I think you're going to be able to fit yeah. right here.
So before you got to 16, you obviously had a fascinating childhood. Would you like to share with us how your parents came to be in Australia?
Well, I was actually just doing some research because you mentioned that my sister's a broadcaster. My dad did a stint of broadcasting on
so it is in the blood.
3ZZZ. Yeah. And my mum is actually now getting her fingers into radio herself. And I was just listening to her. She's written a piece that has sort of turned into an audio drama in the car on the way in. And I was just crying the whole time because it's essentially her story of her leaving Vietnam, of her getting into a tiny little boat, you know, stacked up with 13 people, you know, escaping Vietnam after the war, and yeah, it's an incredible thing to. I'm sure we can elaborate on.
Oh, I'd like to do that. So, and where would that go to? Ebe?
Well, the magic of radio these days is you can sort of just put it out on the internet, and there will be someone who will want to listen.
Well, I think you've got two people already.
Oh, absolutely.
So, why don't
I
we
feel
just
like crying tonight?
Yeah, I think we will.
Our community, our stories, our voice. Joy 94.9.
You're on Our Voice and our special guest is Dan Vo and we have Anastasia filling the boots of Jess tonight.
Yeah, and how funny is it? Like, I haven't been nervous on radio for ages now and being on someone else's show, I just feel like I've got to be on my best behaviour.
Well, you don't
And this
have
is
to
really
be.
Professional radio. It's
We're
not just
trying.
A matter of throwing tracks on like Anastasia does in the morning.
Which, in a minute, you'll be back. And I do appreciate you coming in because you won't have much time between.
Nah, it's fine. I'll just sleep here.
Yeah. But thank you for filling in for Jess,
Absolute
who
pleasure.
Unfortunately couldn't be here tonight because I'm sure she'd love to meet you, Dan. She loves it when I interview youngies like
yeah,
herself.
Yeah, she's missing out.
Yeah. So, Dan, prior to going to that break, you were talking about your mum and her story coming from Vietnam. Do you want to just elaborate on that?
She's a boat person and she left Vietnam. There were several attempts actually to leave Vietnam, and there was a few times when she was rounded up and put into the local prison because, you know, you couldn't escape. You weren't allowed to escape. Why would you want to escape a communist country? And so, yeah, I was just listening a little sort of radio thing that she's put together, and it's sort of incredible. It's sort of many years I've grown up just hearing ushered, you know, sort of hushed discussions in other rooms as a child growing up when the parents would gather and they'd sort of recount the tales and never really want to share it with the children. But she sent this link to me a few weeks ago, and it's quite an intense tale. I've kind of gone through the same sort of tried to go through the same path that it took her to go through. And I would say it'd be utterly terrifying just to think that there's a phrase that she uses, which was, you know, in death she would find new life.
Oh, wow.
You know, that was the risk. You either died trying, died on the sea, or there were so many ways to die. There were pirates. There were the
elements.
The commandos trying to pull back the people, or commandos on the other side not wanting to let the people in. To kind of get to that point where death is the not something that you would fear, you know, to get to that point where you think that getting into the boat is your best option, and that still happens to this day. And you know, I think that you know, we need to be a lot more understanding of when we think of, you know, let's turn the boats back, being a phrase that gets bounded around in our politics. It's something that we've got to really actually consider why these people are jumping into boats. And
it's a beautiful thing what your mother's doing. If we can get that out on the airwaves and educate people about what it's really like. And what about your mother's siblings? Did they come with her or did they have to stay? Or?
We've got most of the family in Melbourne, actually. Right. A significant number of her. She's number nine. We count differently in Vietnam. So technically for us, she's the eighth child of 10. But in Vietnam, she's number nine.
Okay.
And our entire family are intact after the war, and many have tried to escape and actually got through. So we're in Melbourne, we're in Canada, we're in America. So it's a very rare occurrence for there actually to be a family that lost no one at sea.
Wow.
So it's we've got a very good family here, and I remember weekends we'd always gather together and it'd be big, you know, sort of family do's, and you know, it's. We are very lucky to my sister and I to be where we are, because I remember growing up we'd have, you know, family dinners on the floor, you know, just a tablecloth spread out and everyone would gather around. You know, now we have tables and cars and I'm flying to London, you know, that sort of thing.
And I know this show's about you, but I'd love to know, how did your mum meet your father?
They met in Melbourne. They met here.
Oh, okay.
again, it's a story that hasn't really been passed down to me. So it's...
You mustn't be as inquisitive as what I am.
That's why you're here, Caroline.
I just stick my mum in a room with you and you can tell me afterwards.
We'll give you.
But they met here, and I think there's a fantastic Vietnamese community here. Mm. I think we're probably one of the larger Vietnamese communities around the world, you know, of overseas Vietnamese people. And there's a really good community here, you know, and we're quite spread out. We've got Springvale, Richmond, and... Footscray.
I was going to say, don't forget Footscray.
Footscray, yeah.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I think they sort of met at, there's many local gatherings, community gatherings. So I think in general, growing up, the whole notion of a community that you are connected to, that you are supported by and that you contribute to was very important. So and it leads to things like wonderful friendships and, you know, partners to be and that sort of thing.
So you were saying also in the introduction, I mentioned that you're very close to your maternal grandparents. How much influence have they had on you? And
Mum and Dad did shift work. So they were literally ships passing in the night. She'd come home and Dad would go off to work.
Yeah.
And so my grandparents raised me. I remember my grandfather taught me maths and my grandmother taught me David Attenborough. She would watch David Attenborough all the time. So a lot of what I know about, you know, the world and animals and all that is, you know, just sitting next to her in her rocking chair and just watching, you know, these amazing TV shows. And they also taught me the foundations of who I am insofar as, you know, Vietnamese society, the way that it structures. It is a Confucian-based society, so there are things like very male, you know, the male lineage and all that sort of stuff. But my grandmother became the matriarch of the family, and she was a very powerful woman, so there was very much a very strong sense of equality in the family. Male and female stood as equals, but also just how you treated other people, how you needed to be, insofar as the family came first. So we always gathered as a family. Even the way that Vietnamese people sort of say their name, the last name always comes first because the family is always more important.
Wow.
So.
Is that why that is? Yeah, okay.
Mm. And the counting system, which mentioned before, it counts differently because my mum is eighth child and it's number nine because the parents are the first position. You cannot give
that
it up to anyone but the parents. So.
Wow. We're on Our Voice with Dan Vo, and my co-host is Anastasia. And if you'd like to interact with us tonight, as Trish has done, to say she's enjoying the show, please send a text on 0427 JOY 949 or a quick email on air at joy.org.au. And I think we've just got another little one coming. So it's from my ma. Talk about family.
Is that
my
ma?
That's my ma.
Oh, was family important? Yeah, she's listening.
So right on cue, ma. So thank you very much. But my ma's also very supportive and thinks family's always first. So So now, Dan, you're a traveller. You're here at Joy. You've done your 5 years. You've had a great time. And then you've said at the ripe old
see
age
you
of
later.
About 27.
Yeah, you get shorter sentences for for bigger crimes, I'm sure. Yeah, it's I wanted to see the world, and I was actually took out a map of the world, like a black and white map, and I was going to get my crayons out and just colour in all the places I've been. And I realised I've picked the smallest possible countries in the world. So
it's not going to be very colourful.
On landmass, I've not covered much at all.
You're going to have to go to Russia or...
Yeah. That's right, Russia or China, yeah, just to cover, yeah, you know, most of the world. But Australia is a significant... It's probably the biggest country I've been to, but the more I travel, the more I find it is a big, wide world. And there's so much to see. But at the same time, it's such a small world as well. There's so many... You just bump into people on the other side of the world that you know back home. It's really quite a strange experience.
So what prompted you to actually say, I want to leave now, Joy? You've had a great job. It was obviously, you know, a vibrant community that you were in. But then to say, I'm going to leave all that. And I remember we had a conversation. You were saying that you were only going to go with, I think it was 100 possessions. And you were just discarding everything, and you basically had a bag. And so tell us about that.
I had a theory at the time called Back to Zero, and it was essentially just pairing my things as close to zero as possible and also just getting out of debt, so going to zero from the other position as well. And it worked out quite well. I ended up having... I've got 88 possessions, and 88. They all fit in a... 26-litre bag. And
is that so you can buy 12 things when you go overseas? Or
that's right. It's a very freeing kind of thing to do. And I've done it for almost 2 years, a little bit more than 2 years now. I'm ready to sort of settle down and find, you know, something a little bit more stable now. But it is incredibly freeing. And I think that's what I was looking for. I was looking for freedom. I was thinking back of what my mum had done, essentially at my age.
Yeah.
And it was to go... and just explore and try and find something elsewhere. And I think that's just, there's a drive in us. This is what we do as humans. We always want to see what's just over there in the, you know, dark, shady place. You know, nothing will stop us from trying to go further.
Yeah, and at least you've had the opportunity to do it safely, and unlike your mum who did it in fear.
Mm. If we've got that opportunity and that fortune to do so.
Absolutely. I think it might be time for your second little track for us.
Well, this is a girl who, roughly about my age when she wrote the song, and she is a Vietnamese girl who was born in Belgium and grew up in Belgium. I think very much she wanted to do a very similar thing and sort of just go back to her roots and discover exactly who she was as a Vietnamese woman coming back home.
Our voice, preserving our stories. Join Caroline Vogels and Jess Moorhee for an insight into the lives of our community elders. Joy 94.9.
And our special guest is Dan Vo, and filling the boots tonight.
I thought you were
going
to say, yeah, special guest is Anastasia, but it's so about Dan Vo tonight.
Yes, that's right. It's so unusual for you, Anastasia. We did get a message in regard to that from Betty saying it's the quietest she's ever heard
you.
Yeah,
I know. I'm behaving. It's about Dan tonight.
We are trying to make it about Dan. However, we're getting a plethora of lovely text messages. We've had my sister talking about family again. She's listening, and I'd have to say she went to Vietnam and loved it, so it'd be good to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And we've had the lovely David, who has texted in to say, "G'day, Caroline, Anastasia and Dan. Thank you for such an interesting and personal discussion."
Oh, that's lovely.
We love you, David.
Yeah, and David loves the story, yeah, like we all do.
It's one of those things that I walked through the corridor and had a look at the snow domes as well and went, yeah. Good memories.
You didn't bring him one back.
Oh, that's a good one, actually.
Yeah. That'd be 89 possessions. Where are we? We've only gone to Vietnam. We haven't even got anywhere yet.
You know what? We need another good 3 hours, but we haven't got them. So we need to cover as much as we can in the next 30 minutes.
So, Dan, I'm interested in, you were raised in a Vietnamese family, but born here in Australia, then travelling to Vietnam. How was that?
I'm what the Vietnamese in Vietnam call overseas Vietnamese, or they've got a less polite term for it. But I grew up in the northern suburbs, the north, and I went to a predominantly Anglo-Saxon primary school. It was a state school. My sister went to the Catholic school. And so we kind of grew up with very Western education, obviously a very Western education. It was a Western education. And then I went off to a Catholic boys' school in the north as well. And We had Vietnamese school on the weekends, but as kids, when your weekend's getting cut into by something else, you don't like it. And so it was, I've kind of always grown up with this sort of dual. I actually remember there was a point in my childhood where I stopped thinking in Vietnamese and started thinking in English.
Okay. Mm. How do you dream?
In Technicolor. And it's an odd experience to go to Vietnam because I've been three times, once as a child. And as a child, you assimilate very quickly. And the second time was roughly early 20s. And then again, the last time I went was sort of after my mid-20s. And it was challenging because the last time I went was without family. So I didn't go with my mum or my dad. So there was no one sort of in between to kind of protect me from it all. Yeah. And I had to very quickly learn Vietnamese. Very funnily enough, because I was raised by my grandparents, I realised that I spoke in 1950s lingo.
Oh, my God, that's hilarious. Yeah.
That was a giveaway.
So funny. Grammatic. You would have been hilarious over there.
It's like you've just stepped out of Happy Days or something. Hey. And it's just, it was a really interesting experience because the thing about growing up here is there's a psychological thing, which they call culture freeze, which is what my parents would have. Coming over from Vietnam to here, they have an idea of what Vietnam is like back then. And so I grew up with their vision of Vietnam. And when I got there, it was quite different. Yeah. And so there were things in my mind that I thought, well, surely the gay community would be underground. Surely, you know, the idea of gay rights would be not there at all. But there's actually quite a prominent gay community. Then just this week, I need to read the article properly, but they're considering legalizing gay marriage.
I was just about to say, you're not going to say they're considering legalizing gay marriage.
They are. And
they might beat Tasmania.
I know, Australia, lift your game.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's pretty tragic, isn't it?
It's quite extraordinary to think, especially when it is an Asian country that is very based on the whole idea of face comes first. Mm. You know, what you show to everyone else must be the best. And for them to think that legalizing gay and lesbian marriage is the best, that's a really good thing. I know when I was in Singapore and talking with a lot of Singaporeans who are very sort of in the powerful echelons, they were sort of saying no Asian country is going to do it because they're afraid that their system, you know, the neighbours will kind of go, well, you know. But somebody is going to do it. Somebody has to start doing it. And for it to be Vietnam, that would be wonderful.
Dan, so, that would be incredible.
And what about the emotional connection when you went there? I know I've only been, like, I'm born here, but my parents are Dutch. I've only been to Holland three times. And the last time I went there, I was out coming off the aircraft and went into the toilets at Schiphol Airport, Amsterdam. But there were women talking Dutch in the airport. Well, I just started to cry.
Oh.
And it was this connection of just like, it was like coming to the homeland when I hadn't been born there. I'd hardly ever been there. But it was just this amazing thing. I think, oh, this is so, so, you know, in my soul.
I had the exact when I got to Greece and I was wailing, not in Athens, but when I got to my mum's land, a little island, I could not stop crying and I couldn't work out why, but it just felt so right.
Yeah.
It felt like home. It was bizarre.
Was there any reaction like that for you then?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. It just captures every single part of your body just goes, yes, this is so right. This is what I was built for. This is what I've kind of, you know, I'm supposed to be. Everything just feels right. It sort of sinks right into this spot here. I'm pointing to my chest.
Yeah.
Particularly on the radio. It sits there and you just know you're comforted by it. It's, I don't know, did you have family sing lullabies to you as a child or something?
Absolutely.
Yeah, my mother told a little Dutch stories about Haza Koteltje and Kanana Koteltje. And if there's any Dutch people there, they'll be laughing their heads off. What that's about. But anyway, we'll keep that within the family. But it's you know, these connections of stories. And I understand also what you're saying about the language, because when my parents came here and then all of a sudden there's space travel and they didn't know what words to use for that because it wasn't happening when they were back home. So there are these huge sort of, especially in the 50s and 60s, you know, when there wasn't the communication like internet and so on, and, you know, even in the 80s for you guys too. It's quite amazing.
Ooh.
We're all looking at each other here.
I'm backing Greece on that bus wailing.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm in Holland and you're in Vietnam and we're just...
Do you almost feel, you know, when you were in Vietnam, did you almost feel like a different person in, you know, a weird kind of way when you're speaking the Vietnamese language as opposed to the English? Like, I can't explain it, but it's a weird kind of thing.
I discovered that... because I learnt Vietnamese from my parents, my mum's family in particular, I discovered that we actually speak Vietnamese with a country drawl.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So it's like if you think of of how a Southern Texan person speaks English.
So you're talking Vietnamese, yeah, Shania Twain style.
and people would look at me because I had to listen very carefully and realise they're speaking it very sharp and very quickly. And it's not because, you know, they're in a hurry or anything. It's just because our family speaks slower. Oh, and you realise little things that, you know, that you didn't realise before. And it is absolutely lovely to kind of just have that. And it's... Did you grow up with, you know, did you learn, can you speak Greek?
Well, it was my first language. I was born here, but my parents didn't speak English, so I spoke, it was my first language, Greek, so I couldn't speak any English.
And Carolyn?
No, what we were brought up, I think my parents were thinking a new country. They already learn English at school, but in a new country you assimilate and you become part of the local. And I think as my sister learnt Dutch like through school, but I wanted to be like everyone else and I didn't want to, you know, be abnormal. And so we learnt swear words and Dutch Amish songs. And when I did go and meet my grandmother, my mother said, don't say anything that you've learnt because your grandmother won't be very happy. So, but now it's such a disappointment because I find it difficult to learn a language. And also my aunt and uncle, while they speak beautiful English, grammatically correct, and they can spell as my mother can, unlike us children, it's difficult because we can't communicate in their own sort of language, those humour and things, you know, it's disrespectful because, you know, I'm asking them, you know, to talk English when I go to Holland, you know.
I think there is a sense of loss in translation if you don't have that language to start off with. Stories are just more vivid when they're told in that original language. Mm-hmm. Vietnamese language is quite simple insofar as I think we've only got one word for happy. Sort of deviations, but it's in English, there's just so many words for it. In Vietnamese, it's just one word. But in that one word, it holds so much. Mm. And for me, when I hear that word, it holds so much more meaning than 100 words of that same.
Yes.
Can you share the word?
Yeah. Do you know the word? Oh. Can you remember?
Well, the first thing I think of is just hanful, which is sort of happiness. It's what you greet to people during Vietnamese or Lunar New Year. So you sort of, you know, chúc hanful, which is hoping
cute.
Happiness in a way.
Oh, fantastic. Mm. Now, we've had a couple more messages in.
We have.
Do you want to read them, Anastasia?
Yeah, we've got another one here. We've got enjoying you guys. Special love to my Anastasia and the hot Brian.
Woohoo.
So nothing to do with Dan, but she's loving the show and she would be really connecting because she's Lebanese and she speaks Lebanese fluently and she has that whole thing going on as well. So thanks for listening, Sue. Isn't it amazing what radio does? It just reaches people from everywhere.
And I think Grant's rung in as well to say good day. So
Grant's also called in saying he's enjoying the show. And we've got another one. Loving the show, Caroline and Anastasia. That's Gemma.
So thank you, Gemma, for listening.
Absolutely.
Another person that has often early starts in the morning. So we appreciate y'all staying up for us.
I apologise for tomorrow.
There's that southern accent. Yeah.
So those that have just tuned in, we're all listening to Dan Vo. And Dan used to be working here at Joy in the marketing manager and assistant manager. And we have Anastasia on panelling and interviewing.
I'm really concentrating in
doing very hard. That's why she's quite quiet compared to what we'll hear tomorrow at sunrise.
Well, it's all about your reputation.
And also Thursday mornings.
Yes.
Does a great show.
Yeah. I want to get into, we've probably got a minute before we play our gorgeous sponsors, but did you ever feel pressured, you know, being Vietnamese and that whole thing of family, the face of the name of the family, did you feel that pressure?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I was sat down by my uncle when I first started at Joy and he said, you need to get out of that station now. You need to take it off your resume. You are not going to get another job if you keep it on there.
Wow.
And did he say it in that tone of voice? I'm scared.
Well, I'm scared of him too.
I'm paraphrasing, but it was a very long conversation.
Yeah.
But, and there was a very, I think, you know, up until that point, I thought he was quite a
cool.
Hip and cool mm. uncle. But there is a... I think that it still follows through to this day, but that was 15 years ago, maybe 10 years yeah. ago. I've kind of proved him wrong.
Yeah.
And how's your relationship with him now?
It's fine now. Yeah. I think he's seen that I've kind of followed it through. Yeah. I think most of the family have come to accept it or even embrace it simply because, you know, you follow through and you do it with conviction and, you know.
Yeah, do it well, as you did.
Our Voice, sharing the stories of our community elders. You're on Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9 with Anastasia and Dan Vo. And Dan, what we often do at this point in time, we ask our guests to bring in some memorabilia, but because I've got the inside running with you, what I've asked to do is that I asked you to bring in the speech you made at the 2009 Joy AGM, because when my partner Trish and I attended that AGM, often AGMs are dry and
boring, they're really dry,
but not here at Joy, because people share stories. And yep. this particular day, Dan read a very moving piece, and I asked Dan to bring it in, and I was wondering, Dan, whether you'd like to talk about it and share a little bit about what you spoke about.
It's been a while since I've read it through. It was an important point for me, because at the time it felt like I was handing over the station. I was handing over the station. And I was just getting to the point where you mentioned earlier that I was the youngest staff member and the longest serving staff member, all bundled into one person. I joined the organization when I was a bright-eyed, shiny 21-year-old, and I came out the end slightly less bright-eyed.
Still bright-eyed and shiny to me.
I've learned so much. I've done so much. And, you know, it's a great thing about community radio. You are put down in a chair and told to just do it. And you give it a go, which is great. You know, you put a sort of responsibility on the shoulders of people who, in other places you might not get the opportunity to. And things like the Foundation for Young Australians course, I got to do that here.
What was that? Can you explain a little?
Joy was given a grant from the Foundation for Young Australians at a point in time just after we'd received the full-time licence. And the spearheads of that was Paul Turditch and Adam Stobbs, of course. And essentially the course, we did 70 students. We had 70 students go through it, and Adam Stobbs always was the late Adam Stobbs, I should say, was a very important figure in that. And I was a staff member at the time, and so we had this very strange thing where he always called the people that he taught his radio babies. Mm. And he never called me his radio baby, simply because there was a, you know, I was a staff and yet I was his trainee. So we always had a very interesting relationship as a pupil and teacher, but he taught me a great deal, as he did a lot of people, I believe.
Yeah. Yes. He was
You've
wonderful.
Been taught by Adam.
I was too.
Adam was a contributor to, I think, more than 30 stations across Australia.
Yes.
And
yep.
taught
yep.
at...
And he was a member of like 70 radio stations.
Yes. Absolutely. He was a community man. And I think the people who have gone through that course are very lucky, because, one, we got taught by Adam, but we also got this massive... it's like getting Play-Doh or clay or something in your hands and just going, just make something. And we all made something and made something of ourselves. We all went off to, you know, we've got people who are in commercial radio and community radio still as leaders. And that program that Joy had was extraordinary. And I know it's sort of developed into the Taste of Radio here now as well, which is in a very important sort of brings in new people and gives people a voice, you know, the critical thing.
There'll be some people from the Taste of Radio following our show today. So hang around.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, give it a go. It's called Fresh Air. So tell us about this speech, because I'd like to hear a little bit about
it. Me too.
Well, the speech, I went to a conference and came back, and the question was, how do we build resilience in our communities? And it was, you know, I needed to come up with the answer for Joy. And inevitably, I think what we always end up doing, we're faced with challenges, we often draw back on what we know. And I drew back on the fact that I come from a Vietnamese background. Radio is the thing that bound us back home. I grew up in an era where the internet had not come into being yet, and you know, cheap telephones weren't available yet, and no mobiles. You couldn't, you know, free text back home. You couldn't do that. And radio was that thing that gave us little trickles of news. Very slowly gave us trickles of news, but it gave us news. It gave us stories from home. It gave us just the music of home and all that. And I realized that that was the thing that bound the Vietnamese community together, and the fact that we had suffered a war. And here in the gay and lesbian community, I think we may not have had a war, but we certainly have battles, and the biggest battles that we face are the personal battles that we have as we sort of face the notion that we're different and that we're gay and that we've got to come out and we've got to, you know, face this new world and find our place in it. And so the speech was very much about that. And for me, if you want me to quote from it...
Yeah, please do.
I'll just sort of fast track it towards the bit where it was just... I was a young Catholic boy in suburbia from a Vietnamese background with the whole notion of the patriarchal society, living for the family, needing to have a son to carry on the family name. And yet I had a crush on a boy, and that was just something that, you know, being gay... for me meant anger and isolation and fear, and I had considered suicide as well. You know, they filled my thoughts as a teenager, and I just wanted to be free from the torment. And when I found joy, essentially what I found was freedom. Hearing another young man talk on air about the fact that he'd had a crush on another boy in school was an awakening. It was freedom, euphoria. It was life-changing and life-saving radio.
And it's having the same effect on me 3 years later as what it did in 2009.
Absolutely.
It's a very moving piece, Dan. Thanks for sharing that. So what are you doing overseas now in London? I believe you are residing.
Yes, I head up a media company in Soho, and we produce radio for BBC. And we also programs, and we also do audiobooks. So still very tied to the whole notion of the story being a very important part of existence. You know, we need to share stories, and we do share stories. That will never stop.
Mm. I'm hoping that you'll be able to get an audiobook written by your mum, because I think that would be sensational.
Yeah,
I think it would certainly rate very well. Yeah. You're in London. What's your plans? What's your dreams from here?
Well, I love the big questions.
London's
a fantastic, fantastic city. It's very large. It's full of a lot of people, not necessarily people who are all Londoners. And so I think that London lacks what we have here, which is this station, which is this hub where everyone can come together. And you know, I know that there are people here who aren't from Melbourne, you know, and they also have a place here. This notion of a place where you can come and just be yourself and be accepted for who you are and be recognized for who you are. And you've got little outlets in London. I would love to be able to either replicate or bring this station to London, because you need something that binds everyone of difference together, and that would be.
I think you're the man to do it.
I reckon you are too.
The gay and lesbian station at Manchester. Have you been there or done that? Or
I must confess, I haven't. I've dealt with them. We do a bit of work with stations across the country, and we've worked with them, but I haven't touched base in order to to media make with them on a personal level yet.
But, well, maybe there's a little model there that you can, because I reckon you single-handedly could do some fundraising and get some money for it, but also with your media contacts. I think it's...
certainly not single-handedly. Always bring
just
in...
Starting off and then spread the love, as we do here. But you also have, an idea to maybe do gay and lesbian impacts of radio, gay and lesbian in Vietnam, what's happening?
It's something that I spoke with Adam Stobbs about, and I'm still tinkering away on it. It's sort of like a personal hobby that's, you know, you kind of leave it in the garage, and then occasionally you come back to it and you kind of work on it a little bit more, and then you go, okay, I'm going to walk away from it now, because it sort of develops itself into bigger than Ben Hur sometimes. But yes, I do want to make a series, and I've been in touch with a few people who are interested in sort of assisting with it. Just sort of looking at the history of the future of and the current placement of the Vietnamese community and the gay Vietnamese community. It's something that I think is very special and unique, as you would expect it to be. And I think it's something that we can learn from, and I would love to share with people. There are so many interesting and fascinating people that go right back into history or go into the war period. There was a poet that was supported by the government, the communist government, or well, the communist government to be, who was gay.
Oh, wow.
And
no way.
And then, you know, he was ignored for a little while because he was, and sort of disappeared. But he's now being brought back into the awareness of the consciousness of the people. And so times change, and it's really great to see. And it's great to also reflect on the fact that we have been, always been there, sometimes ignored, sometimes put to the side, sometimes shunned, but we're always there. And now we're coming back to the fore. Gay and lesbian marriage in Vietnam. Wouldn't that be a lovely thing?
It would be such a beautiful thing.
And that's a perfect point just to head off to a couple of messages.
Our Voice, preserving the stories of our community elders. Joy 94.9.
We're on Our Voice. We have Dan Vo here. And unfortunately, someone beat me to the punch. We've had a text in from Dimitri saying, someone at Joy, give Dan a program. He has the sexiest voice I've ever heard on radio. And Dimitri, I've been meaning to ask, you know, let Dan know that.
I know. I've been getting a little bit funny. Questioning my sexuality right now.
Oh, are you? Oh, Anastasia. We try and keep it nice here. We play
just
nice
being
here.
Funny. I'm such a lesbian.
Such a flirt.
You are. But you see, there even he says that. Such a flirt. It's so beautiful. Now, Dan, we're coming into the closing stages of the most rapidly finishing hour I've ever been a part of. And these are some quick fire questions. So we're just going to ask you a couple of them. Dan, who's your favourite GLBTI icon?
Justice Michael Kirby.
If you could invite three people to dinner, either living or past, who would they be?
Justice Michael Kirby, Ian McKellen, and Noel Coward.
Lovely. If you could be anywhere in the world, where would you like to be right now?
I'd love to be in sort of like this strange time warp, or the TARDIS, so I could be in London and Melbourne at the same time.
Fantastic. That's awesome. A good one.
Doctor Who fans, there you go.
Name one thing on your bucket list.
One thing. to travel with the Doctor. This is getting really geeky.
We're going to ask you a simple one. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Sunrise or sunset?
Sunrise, because I never see them. I see the sunsets.
Ah, okay. Yeah. We're going to see a sunrise here because we're going to stay in the studio. Anastasia's going to keep going until her breakfast show. What's your favourite hobby?
Radio. Yeah, radio.
What's your favourite film?
Favourite film. I still like Run Lola Run. Just the idea that you have three chances to get it right.
Yep.
Oh, sounds good. I might do that for our radio show. What's the most outrageous thing you've ever done?
Packed up my home and went travelling. It's not that outrageous. We can all do that.
With 88 possessions, that's the difficulty. What's been the best experience of your life?
I think it must be going to Vietnam and standing on the family cemetery and doing a full 360 look around at everything. It was just like a Lion King moment. That once upon a time, that was our family lands, and all our ancestors have come back home to that place, and just to be there.
I think that's a beautiful note to wrap up an interview with Dan Vo. Thank you, Anastasia, for being our co-host.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Dan, you've shared some amazing experiences, and I really would like to meet your mum one day. I think she's very special. And we'll leave you. We're handing over to some lovely young men from Fresh Air. It's going to bring you a show about letters.
Yeah.
And Dan would like to say...
I just wanted to share the last thing on the quote that from that speech, because I think it's still relevant to this day. It's from a Vietnamese Buddhist monk who his name is Thich Nhat Hanh, and his quote is, "Joy sometimes is a cause for your smile, but your smile is the cause for joy."
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much, Dan. Thank you, Caroline, for letting me panel.
Thank you. Thanks, Dan. Safe travels.
You have been listening to Our Voice on Joy 94.9. For more information, head to joy.org.au to connect with Our Voice online.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.